Got Nick in a blue hat, and we're going to go over Anilin leather, what it is, maybe how you make it, maybe talk about some finishing. Ready to go, Nick?
I'm ready.
Start us off with this, Nick. Let's go with a definition of Anilin. What is Anilin? What does that mean? And what is Anilin leather?
So Anilin refers to, in the leather world at least, refers to this, the surface color or the surface finish or the surface dyeing of the of leather. And it's sort of, it exists sort of on a spectrum that goes on one end from like fully Anilin to then semi-Anilin to then, you know, pigmented or painted on the other end of the other end of the spectrum. And fully Anilin or Anilin just means no, well, it should mean no pigments, no solids of any kind. So you've got the piece of leather and you're only staining it. So you're just changing the color without sort of masking anything that's on the surface. And then that goes, you know, you can start to add a little bit of pigment and solids in, and that goes all the way to the other end of the side where you're just like, there's no stains and you're just painting something and you're completely covering up whatever's underneath.
I think a place that might be relatable that people may have experienced in their real lives, and I'll just give my fun anecdote, is I needed to stain or put some sort of coverage on my wooden deck in my backyard to protect it from the elements. Kind of actually very similar concept to leather finishing. And when you go to the paint store, shout out to Mr. Williams, at I think his first name is Sherwin. If you look at their paint catalogs for the outdoor stains and paints, they come in a range of transparent, semi-transparent, and full coverage. This, to my understanding at least, is very analogous to the leather finishing terminology, where Anilin, in my mind, just means transparent finish. And to go a little bit farther on that, when I think about what does the transparent finish really mean, it still means you can see a lot of the natural character in the leather or in the wood, as opposed to the opposite of what an Anilin finish would be or a transparent finish would be, is like a full coverage, fully painted piece of wood or piece of leather, where it starts to appear much more like paint and a little bit less like wood or leather. Sound about right, Nick? Yeah. And then
it's a perfect comparison. Yeah,
semi-transparent is like, yeah, it's sort of, I don't know. I think I chose a semi-transparent because we had some, and this is also perfect for leather analogies, on our deck, we had some older wood and then we installed like some new decking, and those two different mismatching woods needed to look the same ish hopefully, and some of that older wood was a little beat up and we wanted to cover up some imperfections and things that have happened to it. So again, perfect analogy to the leather world.
Yeah, because you got two different, completely different colors, and like if you went full coverage, like there, you wouldn't have to think about anything at all. You just slap it on there and it could be, you could have different kinds of wood or different colors or different ages and it'll all look the same. But we should get into that. There's a trade-off. I mean, there's trade-offs all up and down the line in terms of what that means. Well, for the wood and for the leather too.
It's interesting too, is like, it, just like everything else we speak about, it feels like everything we speak about on the show is really just depends on what you like. When we were talking about leather care, for example, this is another one of those where there's no wrong. There's no judgment on quality, in my mind at least, between the difference between a transparent Anilin finish and a, you know, semi-transparent and a full finish. I don't think there's anything wrong with any of them or anything specifically great about any of them as just a general statement. I think, you know, I can say some things that I like, but I think there's value for each of the ways that, I guess there's, what I'm trying to say is there's value to each of those, and there's no worse or better.
Yeah, I think that there are, I mean, I think that when you think about this or when you talk about it, you are immediately sort of drawn or talking about the physical, I mean, the the visual appearance of it, you know, because one looks different than the other. And I think that that can distract from the performance trade-offs that come along with it, because they're striking, and you know, there's pluses and minuses to each one. And you just have to think about, I mean, it's like with any product, you think about the end use or what the product is going to be. And then you sort of figure out how to make it. I mean, it's unusual, at least in the leather world, I would say. No, I'm not going to. You should take that out. Never mind.
You're going to call yourself out there or something?
Yeah. I decided it was too complicated to justify.
You know, something else I think about is finishes of all, for all material types. And then another one I think about frequently is brick, because we're in Chicago, we have all this cool old brick. Are you aware of, is there a stain for brick that is in the same way that you have an aniline finish or transparent? It's either nothing on it or it's a paint for brick.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the color for bricks, like in Chicago, is from the actual substrate, from like the proportions of clay and the color of the clay and the sediment and all that stuff. And also how they're baked.
It's pretty.
I went down a brick rabbit hole.
Yeah, I actually did too. Chicago had specific clay or whatever sediment that it was. Mm. It is like known as Chicago brick, and it is
Chicago common brick. Yeah,
yeah, it's like a very specific coloring, which is kind of interesting when we're trying to relate the concept here to leather, because it's you know, here's another fun anecdote. There's some really old vintage. I don't know if vintage is the right word. Very old. I don't know what they're called, but there's these buildings that were bars, and they have these amazing bronze, I believe, Schlitz like emblems over the top. And I saw there was some controversy because there was a new owner for one of these beautiful old Schlitz buildings that was the natural brick, and it was sort of this yellowy brick that I don't particularly love. And the community was pretty upset because this new developer just painted it all white, which here's a fun tangent. For anybody trying to paint brick, it's been advised to me to never paint brick, because you seal in all the moisture that will get trapped in there, and inevitably all the joints between the brick will crack, because especially in Chicago, when we have freezing weather, that moisture freezes and just cracks everything. It's a disaster. I have a, where our workshop is at Ashland, we have a split face block building that the prior owners painted over, and we had these joints all explode. And they had to go through, and there's particular finishes that are breathable, which is kind of also interesting, where there's finishes on leather that are breathable. There does seem like there's a huge world in finishing, but let's step away from that tangent and come back to the term aniline. I don't think I've ever really known what that word means or where it comes from. I know what it means in the context of leather, again, like more of a transparent visual appearance. But I think you've done some brief research on the term.
Yeah, I went to etymology.com or whatever it is. Because I had never looked it up either. It's for whatever reason. And it's actually from, it comes from the word that means indigo in Arabic. Yeah, so aniline itself is a colorless liquid, to make it things more confusing, which I guess colorless makes sense, even though that the base of the word is from indigo shrub in Portuguese, according to Wikipedia. But it's used in the colorless aniline liquid is used in different like industrial processes, according to Wikipedia again, polyurethane, dyes, and other industrial chemicals. So it's kind of wrapped up in itself. And there's, on this page, at least from what I can see, no mention of anything leather related.
I wonder if it's another one of those borrowed marketing terms, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Or the particular dye type. I know that there's such a thing as an acid dye. Maybe there's a particular thing as an aniline dye, in the same way where it's using some component there that is from the. I'm not sure.
I mean, maybe it's because it's talking about a colorless liquid, and it's talking about the like the manufacturer of dyes, and it's an. You know, so maybe traditionally I mean, I'm totally guessing that the product the aniline, the liquid aniline, was used in the making of dyes that were then aniline dyes. That's all I can think of.
I strongly suppose this is another one of those great ways to market leather, because it's a word that doesn't have a full meaning. It's sort of like a contextual kind of meaning, right? It's like just a way to put a adjective or a descriptor on a thing to sell it better, which I feel like I come across a lot, like genuine leather. Like that's, I suppose all language is made up to some extent, but in the leather world,
snuffed suede.
Nubuck last week. It's like, it's such a bizarre world. Yeah. And that's kind of why you and I decided to talk about these topics, is because they're confusing. And I think they've been purposely confusing to sort of, you know, sell people more stuff without them knowing what the hell it is. So we would like to demystify some of that. And I don't have any specific examples to call up, but one example that comes to my mind, I can't remember who it was, or maybe I'm just misrecalling, but I feel like I've seen cars be marketed with aniline leather interiors. And to me, it's shocking that they say that, because I don't think I've ever seen a car interior with an aniline leather, an aniline finish, nor would I want that. Maybe the question in here is, Nick, have you seen these words for cars? And I don't know, am I in the right case or right idea for not wanting an aniline car interior?
Yeah, not, that's up to you if you want it or not. I mean, if you want a car interior that's gonna, if you want your car interior to get lighter or darker over time, then sure. But I don't know. I'm sure at one point that car interiors did have, or there were some cars that did have like aniline upholstery in them, but certainly nothing in the last,
really,
at least in the mainstream way, like in the last like 50 years, I would think. It's all because people want their car interiors to look the same way forever. I mean, they don't want them to change. And
well, here's where I was going with that.
In the seats that the driver's seat's darker because you sit in that one the most. I mean, people don't want that.
Well, I wonder though, I guess on that thought, is even like a full paint isn't the full story of how that leather was finished. You know, talking about the opposite of aniline, using a fully pigmented finish. I think there's also additional coats of finish that can be applied above the stain or above the paint, adhesions and tops. If you think about painting your walls at home, you might want to use a primer to have that paint stick a little bit better to whatever's underneath it. And that would be a binder or adhesion coat. And the adhesion coats on these car upholsteries, I'd imagine, are incredibly strong, very good binding properties to hold that top coat on. So like, I think we should define
what an adhesion coat is.
Oh, I was thinking like a good definition or a relatable concept would be primers for paint. Like then people, I don't know, maybe people don't paint. Like I've done some painting at home, but essentially there's a couple reasons to use a primer coat of paint. But one of the main reasons is because you want the paint to stick to the wall. And an adhesion or binder coat, those are synonyms, I suppose. Those coats are sort of sandwiched in between a base coat underneath of either dye or paint, and then a top coat above it. So in between those two is this binder that holds the whole system of finish together. But where I was going with this, Nick, with the car thing, is I think there's a misconception that I've come across a few times when researching this topic, where people believe that an aniline leather or an aniline, a leather that's finished with aniline dyes will scratch, or like you will be able to affect the appearance with your nail, which is, I think, that was very alarming for me to hear, because I think they're missing the idea of these top coats and things like of that nature. So what I would like to know from you, is my understanding there correct? You can have an aniline leather with a tough top coat on it that is somewhat impervious, is scratch resistant, for example, that the top coat and that scratch resistance has nothing to do with the term aniline dyed, correct?
I mean, it's related. I mean, we should just go back to the wood example because that's something that everyone understands or at least has some experience with. I mean, think about like the floors in your house. Like you can have, or you may have seen like natural colored floors that you then put like a polyurethane coat on, and that polyurethane is clear and you still see all the wood character underneath, but you can't, if you take your fingernail to it, you're not going to scratch it. And if you spill, you know, a glass of red wine or something on it, it's not going to soak in immediately. So there's a barrier there, but there's a little bit of a disclaimer that needs to happen with that example, because it doesn't really matter how it feels. And also it doesn't have to move at all. It doesn't have to flex. So there's significantly different performance requirements on something that's going to go on a piece of leather than there is like on a, you know, a flat piece of wood. But it's, I think the example is good, but you could, but then to say that it's always aniline isn't true either. Cause you can put pigment in with the polyurethane that you're putting on there, and then it becomes, you know, semi aniline all the way up to the point where you could have a polyurethane or like a you'd be painting your floor with no, I mean, to get full coverage. So it always exists on a spectrum, and even to the extent that you can go mix your own paints and all that stuff, it's like there's this kind of like endless sort of combinations.
I'm going to propose the spectrum of finishing, and aniline isn't even the start of it. I think a lot of people believe that aniline is like the most naked, but in fact, I would use the word naked or crust leather, which is a term people have probably come across. That is sort of the farthest down on least finished and most transparent of the spectrum. The second one would be an aniline stain. The third would be semi-aniline, and then the fourth would be a full paint, full pigment. So in my mind, there are four categories in that spectrum. So maybe we break down each of these in that order and explain what they are and why you might want it, why you might not. Because again, like there's no right or wrong, no better, best, worst in these four. So Nick, start us off with naked or crust.
Right. Yeah. So everything starts off that way. So the three terms that they're going to come after this, everything has to start off as crust. And that just means, in the leather world, just means leather that's been tanned and retanned and dried, and nothing has been done to the surface. So, for the sake of the conversation, nothing has been done to the surface. No color, no, nothing has been done. So it's sort of at that point, it is the leather that it is. It's the base leather. But it has not been adjusted, or the color hasn't been changed, or the feel hasn't really been imparted, or texture, like nothing has been done. So it's kind of like a blank canvas at that point.
Let me be careful here, just because when you say this, I want people to also know that you can have a crust leather that is a color that is different than natural. Like you can have a green crust, you can have a blue crust, you can have a crust that is with no dyes in it. So the color itself can be mill dyed. So I guess I'll back that up a tiny bit too, is the way that you impart these colors at the crust stage would be in a drum with, well, I suppose you could do it with a waterless system these days. I don't even know how they put dyes in like some of the modern tech. But the traditional way would be to make a solution, like you would dye an Easter egg or something, and you would have some penetrating dyes that go through the fiber structure of the skin. So, and then drying that, you end up with a crust that could be a wide range of colors. So I just want to be careful with that, because I think people imagine veg tan, for example, as only one color, which is a great color. It's the most common one, is sort of the color of my skin, or like the color of a light maple wood or something like that. But you can also make veg tan leather that's bright green. Maybe not bright green, but green.
Yeah, I mean, there's the color. It's a slippery conversation, because the color starts to be influenced from at the point of the base tan. Is it a chrome tan leather? Is it a veg tan leather, and then if it's veg tan, you know, what is the blend? How dark are the extracts and the barks? Like, so because you're going to get, you start to get color at the very beginning, and then, you know, the retainage, which we were just talking about. I mean, those all have color in them, but then there's also the ability to bleach and add dyes at that point. And so it's just like there's so many different ways to impart or adjust color all along the entire process that it's hard to sort of nail it down as to it's like one.
I like how you describe
there's not one base. Yeah,
I like how you describe the crust as a canvas.
Yeah,
and it, functionally that is what it is. At least at a tannery that has a finishing department, is that's where you're starting. So let's move it up to the next stage. We're starting after the crust, getting into the finishing process, and let's go with an aniline dyed, more transparent finish on the leather. How do you achieve that? How do you apply it? Is it good? Is it bad? Or what would you want it for? Why would you do that? And why would you not?
Yeah, so aniline, semi-aniline, and then pigmented, I guess, or I'm not quite sure how other people would call it, but it's like, or fully finished, or I mean, there's, I guess there's a bunch of different ways to describe it, but full coverage. Those three things are mutually exclusive. So it's like you're picking one of the three. There's no overlap. And we talked about it just a few minutes ago. Like there's, you're not putting anything to cover up the look below. All you're doing is changing the color with like a stain. So to go back to the wood example again, which I think we'll just keep doing, is if you have like a really nice piece of mahogany or walnut and it's really smooth and the grain is really nice, and you've paid extra money because it's a nice piece of wood, you might stain it clear, or you might stain it dark brown or, you know, dark red or something to sort of accentuate the grain, but you don't want to cover that up because it's, you know, you've paid for it and it's nice. There's a guitar coming, or a bass instrument.
I guess this is a piece of ash that I happen like the figuring on. And, you know, that's not for everybody. Like, not everybody wants that. But for me, it would be kind of a shame to cover it.
And as an aside, like, you wouldn't necessarily pay the premium for a piece of ash if you were just going to paint it. It's sort of, we'll come back to that. But so there's that. And then there's... one second.
Well, I want to know, let's stick on transparent finishes, but I think people want to know how you apply. I suppose you could apply the finishes of all the three remaining categories in the same methods, but I think it'd be interesting for people to hear how you at the tannery apply stains, for example, of the aniline leathers.
Yeah, I think let's talk about pigmented first.
Okay.
So that we have like and then because semi-aniline is sort of, it's self-explanatory. It's like, you know, some midpoint. So there's aniline, which is clear, and then there's pigmented or fully finished or full coverage or however you want to say it, which is the opposite. So you're painting whatever piece of crust that you have, or your leather at a various stage in the process. And that is the most forgiving in terms of whatever is going on naturally in the material, because you're covering everything up. So if you think about, I mean, to use the wood example again, like if you have a piece of like super knotty pine that had like a hole in it, and then you like epoxied the hole to make it one flat surface again, or even if it's a piece of plywood that you sand smooth and then you paint. Like if you were to paint that and put that next to the piece of ash, I mean, you would be hard pressed to tell the difference, but you know, other than the density and the cost. So it's not, they both have their place in the market for sure. I mean, not everything in the world is a piece of nice walnut or ash. And so in order to use it and to make it into a product, you have to figure out what you need to do to it, which is sort of like the name of the game and with tanning in general, is, you know, what do we have to do to make this product as consistent as possible across as many feet as possible? And that philosophy changes depending on what kind of tater you are and how big you are and how much you're making. But we tend to be on the side of the aniline stuff because we're smaller and we're buying higher quality materials relative to what's out there in the world. So we really want to accentuate what's going on with the leather, but that provides its own challenges. So other than the obvious, which is like you get to paint something and you don't have to care about what you're painting because whatever is underneath is covered, versus if you're finishing it clear and whatever is there, you're going to see in terms of, you know, differences in grain or healed scratches or brands or whatever. So there's those two things to contend with. But even beyond that, there are a lot of sort of nuances. You think about fully covering something versus not covering something, it's going to, the feel changes. Because if you're just staining something and you're not completely sealing it up, you can still feel whatever is underneath it. Like, and again, going back to the wood example, like you can stain something and change the color, but it still feels rough or smooth or, you know, however you've left the surface before you've stained it. Where if you paint it, you know, you're kind of covering, you're creating a barrier. So you might still feel something, but you're still, and it, you know, it depends on how much paint and what kind of paint, and so you're covering up a lot of that. So the feel component changes, and then that the same thing that's affecting the feel and creating that barrier can also, or does also, change how the product ages. So is it going to change over time, or is it not going to change over time? Is it going to get lighter or darker? And a lot of that has to do with, you know, the base tannage in the case of leather. You know, what kind of tree barks are in it? Are there tree barks in it? You know, is it UV resistant or not? And, you know, is it going to be like a wallet, like a cordovan wallet from you guys? Like that's a fully aniline piece of leather. And if it's natural and there's no barrier there and you're touching it a lot, the oils from your hands are going to darken it. So there's a lot sort of that's at play there in terms of what's going to change the way the leather looks. And then it starts to get a little bit more, or I guess not more, it starts to get, the differences start to get a little bit less obvious, I would say, after that point.
When I painted my walls or my deck, I had a couple different applicators. And this is where I want to go with it, is I think people don't know what a tannery looks like, right? Or a finish department for leather looks like. Painting a wall or painting a piece of wood, I usually use a brush or a roller. I know that pros will use like a compressed air sprayer. And in my experience at Horween, these are some of the same methods that you use, but that they're done much different than something that looks like a paintbrush. However, the paint roller is kind of similar, but instead of having that dense, I don't even know what the material is, like kind of wool looking roller, it's bristles from like boar hair that brush stains or paints onto the surface of leather. But I think, would I be wrong in saying or assuming that the most common application method is spraying stain or paint on?
Just in general in the world, in terms of everything, yeah. Or in terms of leather, or in terms of
leather,
what we do,
all leather, every tannery.
Good question. I think that there's a pretty large amount of leather that's roll coated at this point, which is like sort of like brushing, but instead of brushing, it's like with a steel roller. So that you're putting a lot more material on,
super evenly. Once.
Yeah. I mean, you're sort of like enrobing the leather, but like putting a very controlled amount on the surface, and then you put it through a dryer and it's sort of setting up and curing, and then you might need to do it again or not, but depends on how heavy the coat is. But there's a lot. I mean, especially
roll coating kind of reminds me of, it directly reminds me of letterpress, but people probably also haven't worked at a letterpress. But it's kind of like a stamp that you might press onto your return address on your envelope or something, but in reverse. It's maybe it's a weird example, but it's like an untextured stamp pad. Does that sound about right, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to describe, but then if you see it, you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like a roller. It's a roll, And so if you think about like a roller that's metal and it's smooth, and then if you were to cut grooves into that along the length of the roller, then there's like a little bit of space for material to get caught in there, whether it's wax or in this case it would be like pigment. And then it goes around and it drops that little bit of pigment onto the leather in really, really even intervals, so that it's kind of like spraying, except you're just putting a lot more on in one shot. And I mean, there are benefits to that. I mean, definitely, because you can't spray everything. I mean, if something's really heavy, like if there's a really heavy wax, for example, you can't you can't really aerosolize it or like make it carry well enough in sort of a mist, no matter how much
you adjust just have to it. Do and even a ton you, of coats of it spraying.
Yeah, I mean, and even if you could, I mean, those the spray equipment is kind of sensitive, so you don't want to like put really gunky stuff through it anyway. So the roll coater is sort of the way around that, where you can put it on mechanically and be really consistent about it, but you're also doing it quickly and heavily.
Would it be safe to say, given that the rolled finish is a heavier coat, I imagine they could do lighter coats as well, but would it be safe to say that it's a less natural appearance?
Not across the board, I don't think.
Okay.
It depends.
Would you say
it really depends? It depends heavily.
I mean, would you say spraying would be a more natural appearance?
Depends too. I mean, because it's all based on proportions. I mean, how much water to stain to pigment? You know, how semi-aniline is it, or is it fully pigmented, or it's just like I don't think there's any general statement that's really safe to make.
So most of what you do is sprayed. Why would you not want to roll coat more?
Because we just don't. We haven't. It's not as traditional. We do roll some stuff on, but just not as much maybe as other places would. But the idea, our sort of philosophy with finishing is that we're building color in thin coats, and like a bunch of thin coats. And that has a couple advantages and plenty of disadvantages. But I mean, you can fine tune color adjustments that way. By putting fewer coats on, you have more chances to like sort of fine tune, you know, whatever color you're trying to match, you can make changes and adjustments. And also you end up with a more transparent looking product. So for us, you know, we are doing mostly aniline stuff.
Is that what I was just asking?
Yeah.
So like a roll coat, you couldn't get that sort of transparent look? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think that you could. I mean, because you can, like, we roll wax onto leather, which has no dye in it at all. So, I mean,
it's not an all or nothing thing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, given apples to apples, you would say a spray application is a more natural appearing finish delivery method.
I think probably just by nature of the process and the world it is, but it wouldn't have to be that way. It's a complicated, I'm making the answer too complicated, but yeah. I mean, because like when we, yeah, I don't want to, I'm not going to go down the road.
All right, fine. Don't do it.
Yeah, so we build a color in like a bunch of thin layers, which is like the same thing again you would do on a piece of wood. You'd have to build the color slowly, and then that gives you a more consistent stained finished product, because you're not like trying to put a huge heavy coat on there, which doesn't want to soak in all at the same speed at the same time. So that's why we do that. But I mean, it has the effect of taking more time and more labor and being more expensive. And
the brush finishing method is interesting too. I don't know how common that is. I'd imagine it used to be pretty common, but maybe not so much anymore. I saw you shaking your head. Stole that answer from you. But my understanding is the reason that you or a finishing department may choose to use a brush delivery method. Is delivery method? Or I don't know what I'm using.
Yeah, that's fine. Application.
The delivery system. Yeah. The reason you might want to use the brush finish, in my experience, is it tends to have more ability to deliver penetrating stains. So, for example, if you are wearing a pair of shoes and you're worried about scuffing them up and having too much contrast between the surface color and the color underneath, these penetrating stains, in the same way that drum dyeing penetrate those fibers a bit, you get a little bit more depth of that color. It sort of sinks in a bit. Do I have that supposition correct about brush finishing?
Yeah, I think that that's more, I mean, maybe, I think that's more of an effect of what you're actually putting on. Because you can put on, when you're putting on the dye, or when we put on the dye, I'll just use us as an example. We heat the leather and we heat the dye, which helps keep everything open and accepting and mobile. And that helps drive things to where you want it to go. And then you can also add different components that further help, you know, drive the dye where you want it to go or penetrate it. Or, you know, and so that's, I'm not so much sure. I mean, I'm sure that you know, spraying or roll coating or brushing on has some effect on that, but I think that that's more of an effect of the material that's going on.
Sure, that makes sense. Yes. Well, like, yeah. Why brush then?
Because it's sort of it's like in between the two. I mean, you're putting more on than you would if you were spraying, but less on than you were if you were rolling. And it's traditional. You know, you're brushing. It's going on with the brush, which is like a total pain, because the brushes have to be cleaned and the bristles come out and you have to be reconditioned. I mean, the people don't do that anymore because it's just another thing to take care of. And it's another thing that needs maintenance and to be cleaned. And you've got certain brushes that are for dark colors and for light colors. And then who's going to put the bristles and recondition the brushes? I mean, it's just like another,
you know, I just thought of something. Step. I'd imagine it'd be pretty annoying to use a lot of pigmented finish with a brush to keep those clean. Maybe that's part of the reason. I mean, you're doing a lot of non-pigment stuff, so brush makes a little bit more sense. Huh, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. The really heavy pigment stuff, like the PU stuff that we talked about before, like the coated leathers, like those are all rolled on, because you need a really heavy, like even application, which is what those heavy pigment finishes are known for. I mean, you put them on there and they're kind of like self leveling. You know, if you think about it, if you put enough on there, it's liquid, it's going to kind of run and be flat as long as you've done all of your prep work to the canvas the right way.
Sure. Okay. So regardless of, I suppose the brush finishing might be an exception here, but it seems like just about all three of those finish applicators, you could make an aniline, a semi-aniline, or pigmented with, I mean, you could do it with brushes. It's just annoying, probably.
So yeah, it wouldn't be the best way. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So I kind of want to summarize full finish, but maybe, I don't know if you did some of the benefits in there and some of the negatives. What do you think the big, like, main reason that, two questions here. Sorry, I'm thinking as I'm speaking. It's terrible. The two questions are, when it comes to a full finish pigmented leather, what would the advantage to the tannery be for doing that? And what would the advantage to the end consumer be? The main reason, like, headline, this is why you want this.
It's the same every time. I mean, it should be. I mean, it becomes a commodity at that point. I mean, you think about like white athletic shoe leather. I mean, there are a ton of different places that make the same product. And as long as it's white and it's the right thickness and it's the right temper or softness, like, it can kind of doesn't matter who makes it at that point. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a cost-driven operation. So you're just looking at, you know, who makes the product that we can use for the cheapest is kind of what happens. So that's it. It becomes a kind of an uninteresting product, but also a product that has huge applications and is hugely important in the marketplace.
So, are you talking a tannery perspective here, or end consumer perspective?
Both, I guess. I mean, I was thinking more. I guess I was thinking of from the
I'm looking for positives though.
Standpoint of like a footwear manufacturer. Yeah, I mean, they want to buy it. They can buy it, and it's inexpensive, and they can buy a lot of it, and it's all the same. I mean, that's a huge benefit. It doesn't, you know, depending on who makes it and how it's made, it's not going to change over time. You know, it'll be, as long as it's not dirty, it'll look the same for a long time. Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, really the consistency and I guess the price are kind of like the main two that I would think, or that I think of when I think of that stuff. But the drawbacks are it all looks the same. It doesn't age well. And if or when it does start to fall apart, it's like there's no coming back from it. I mean, because like, we talked a little bit about adhesion before. So the one of the most important things when you're putting on like a really heavy paint or pigment finish on leather is you have to make sure that whatever is whatever you've done to the leather or put on leather before you put that paint on has to be has to create like a really strong bond between the two. And there are a bunch of reasons why that bond can fail. But when it does, when it starts to fail, like you just it just starts the leather starts to or the pigment starts to flake off of the leather, just like a you know a weathered the outside of a weathered house where the paint starts to come off. It's the same
sure.
thing.
Sure. Yeah. You're so literally you're literally laminating a new skin on top of the skin.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting. I forget who asked me. Somebody asked me about different breaks. And I think they may have listened to the show and heard us talk about a finish break or like a sugary mm-hmm. break. And that's kind of what this is. And I'll try to describe it a little bit. So when you're applying your full pigmented heavy finish that is non-transparent or even a transparent finish for that matter, you can create that new lamination layer on top of the grain. And then as a footwear wearer or in a shoe, that leather... flexes, and Nick was alluding to this earlier with the when you're talking about flooring that doesn't need to flex. Well, the leather needs to be able to move, and sometimes you see this bit of it can be fine bits of break. Usually, it is when it comes to a finish break, but the separation of that new finish layer from the layers below creates what we call as a finish break, which to me is like really gross looking. I suppose I don't like. If I've had a perfect world, I'd never have a crease. I guess maybe
a crease in the finish or the leather, or both.
I guess in both, but like sometimes you want creasing if you want a pebbled look. So I guess that's a caveat. But you know, if I'm wearing a shoe, it'd be nice if it like stayed that brand new look. I suppose, you know, for where my toe's flexing. But anyway, somebody brought this up in the context of talking about Shell Cordovan, and they said, hey, you know, I've got this Cordovan from Horween, and I've got some Cordovan from other places. And I noticed that the Horween stuff doesn't have, they showed me a picture of the valley of that break. And they're like, what's going on here? And I said, that kind of looks like a finish break. And you can
in
also,
our stuff or, no, or in the other?
In the other stuff. They said, well, the Horween doesn't have this. And I said, well, you
Brand
know, I think.
X.
Well, I was like, I think that's either like a top coat, a paint, something else, or it could even be
or
like
an
a
area
wax.
With no shell. Yeah.
Or, yeah. I mean, I've seen a finish break with wax, like you can polish mm-hmm. in the wax and have that sort of delaminate too. But I just think that would be a reason to avoid a full finish is there's more tendency for delamination.
Yeah. I think that there's, I can,
or we more, can, I should say more opportunity for delamination.
We can give an example, I think that's easier or that might be easier to sort of picture, which we can kind of extrapolate, I think. So if you think about, so what's happening with when there's a finish break situation is there's finish. So there's color or wax or pigment or whatever sitting on top of the leather, which is what we would call finish. And what's happening when there's finish break is that the elasticity of that layer is different than the leather itself. So if you've got a layer of paint on a piece of leather that's really firm and the leather that's underneath is really soft and you bend the leather flexes more and travels a further distance than that the paint layer on top, it's going to start to crack and open up, and you'll see cracks in that pigmented layer. And so that would be one version of finish break. And then, but if you bend it the other way, then you sort of see the opposite. So there are varying degrees of what can cause that to happen. But I think that's maybe the easiest way is to think about if the top, you know, if one or the other is much more or less flexible, you know, sort of inverse to the other one, that's when things start to kind of look junky.
This reminds me of the last week's conversation about, I was talking about belts and like laminating two layers of leather together for a belt. And that I've been thinking about that all week. It's like, what? So like you said, the answer would be like make them both the same temper, softness or firmness. But I still got to wrap my brain around that one. I kind of want to test that.
Yeah, I think
it makes sense though. Like if you want them ideally, like I suppose, like I actually had it backwards. I think hearing you describe it now is like you want that outside layer to be more flexible than the inside because it has to move farther, right?
I think belts might be the exception to like all the rules though.
Yeah, because you have both sides, then you have to worry about the brake on the inside. Yeah,
I think that like for if you're talking about a belt, like you really only care about the outside looks like. Yeah, I mean that's you have to sort of prioritize that. Like the same thing with
you do though, and you don't like on a rack. Like if it's all pipey on the liner, you're gonna be like that's kind of junky looking, you know. So it's like it matters at a point.
Yeah, it's such a I take such issue. I talked about that last time. It's like if you are wearing a belt and like you care about or your belt is bent like in such a angle that your belt lining looks like that, like you are.
How are you wearing that belt?
You've been in a terrible accident. And you don't care what your belt looks like.
All right, thank you for lightening the mood there for me.
Yeah.
Would it be safe to say that all those positives and negatives about a full finish leather, is it the exact opposite for a naked or an aniline finish? I mean, all the reasons that you might choose one are the exact opposite the other direction.
It depends how you look at it. Like maybe you want it to be natural. I mean, if you want it to be natural, then and you want to actually see what you're looking at and like use like you're buying leather, you're buying a natural material. So if you want it to look like that, then an aniline finish is the end of that spectrum that's going to give you the most of that. And you also will get a leather, you know, it all just depends on what you're putting on it, but a leather that will most likely feel more like leather. It's not going to feel like a painted piece of...
Well, it could be paint, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It almost doesn't matter that it's leather at a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, it could be plastic or leather or... I mean, we went back to the car interior where like the car interior is now... Like surfaces that you sit on are leather and then the sides of the seats like aren't leather. And if you look at them, it's like you can almost like not even tell the difference because it's just all just covered in plastic.
That is weird. So here, that's a good question. It's like, why do they even bother? Because they can market the car as like a leather interior and it feels more special.
I think so. I do still think that there is on a long enough timeline that the leather substrate is still stronger, as will hold up longer.
But do you think the guy buying the whatever Mercedes with leather interior is driving that car for 20 years to the point where the leather's actually going to break or even non-leather? It's like, it's kind of like we were talking about last week. And by the way, I need to apologize to the audience because I think I was a little bit too lackadaisical with my thoughts about leather uppers not being worn through. By the way, whoever sent me the photo of their shoes that had been worn through, thank you for that. And I had done some more viewing of my own. For people that do like legitimate work, unlike myself, it seems like it's a topic. You have to have a tough leather. But you know, with the car stuff, like these guys are going to drive that car for 2 or 3 years and then get a new one. The people that care enough to buy the premium interior.
Yeah. I don't know about that. There are car companies, which will go unnamed who don't use, they've gone, there's no leather anymore. So, but those car companies haven't been around as long. Well, actually that's not true. The one car company
you're talking about, Tesla.
Yeah. Hasn't been around. You know, we've talked about before, Apple did the same thing. I mean, there's no leather anywhere in there, anything anymore. So, I mean,
the car interior one is, I think, unique though, because you really need performance. I mean, you need UV resistance. It's going to get a lot of wear. It's the same as a couch, right? Like, that's a special circumstance where, like, you know, those naked or like aniline dyed leather couches from Restoration Hardware or whatever sure look damn cool. Like, that looks awesome. But if you're going to paint, if you're going to make it super resilient and never change, it's like, why would you even bother? I don't know. That's where my brain's at. It just seems like a waste.
There was my dad had one of the, I can't remember if it was just the catalog or if he had an actual like piece of like a swatch of a Restoration Hardware leather. And it looked like I was so offended as a tanner, because it looked like a piece of leather that I've tried to avoid making my entire life, and they were selling it. And they were calling it, it was called destroyed leather.
Oh, that we talked about this, your least favorite yeah. leather in the past episode. It looked like that. What was that called?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it's like, they're like, if someone customer ripped, came it in, looks, it's like purposely like marketing genius. If the people, someone came, they're like, this leather, it looks terrible. And the person would just be like, well, it's destroyed. it just looks so bad. But I guess, I mean,
yeah,
I guess. There's something for everybody. But
well, so speaking of which, I'm going to talk about the other side of my mouth, because I love Shell Cordovan. It's one of my favorite leathers. You can make a finish on Shell Cordovan called work shoe butts, which is a full finish horse butt, which kind of is like me talking about full painting like a beautiful piece of walnut or something behind me. It's kind of the same idea.
It's semi-aniline though. It's still semi-aniline.
I say this and then I look at the shoes, those old vintage ones, and I'm like, that's pretty sweet. Or like vintage chrome excel, that's a full pigment. It's awesome. And here's the weird part in my brain, Nick, is I imagine that a full finish leather is a little bit more of like a modern vibe in my brain. I'm probably incorrect in that, but like something a little bit flatter, more consistent, a little bit more futuristic, I suppose. It's like very clean. And then I look at this old work shoe butts and that full finished chrome excel, and it looks really vintage to me. It's mm-hmm. it's really interesting, right? Like I imagine a full finish be more modern, but it appears more vintage when it's worn. I kind of like it. So like, I don't want people to think that I'm here. I won't speak for you, Nick, but saying like, oh, full finish is the worst. I don't like it all the time, but I've certainly seen some beautiful stuff out of full finished leather.
It's definitely not full. I mean, I know what you're talking about, and it's not full finish. And maybe for people that are familiar with the Horween line of stuff, the easiest example to find would be black. Because the only way you can get black is you have to use some pigment, because it's black. You know, if we didn't use any pigment or you didn't use any solids, you being the general you, when you would try to make black, you would just be able to get charcoal. You would never really be able to get like a true black. And that doesn't have the feeling, I mean, partially because the color of feeling like it's just like totally painted on. And the idea is that, at least when we're doing it, is we're trying to increase the consistency and maybe hit colors that we wouldn't be able to hit without pigments, but we're not going full, like whole hog on it. We're not just covering it with paint. I mean, it's still, that's where the semi-aniline conversation sort of comes in, where it's like, you know, we're sort of trying to get both. We want something that's still going to pull up and something that's going to feel nice and age well, but also you're going to cover up like some of the stuff. So it's a total spectrum, and you can change how much or how little you're adding. And then it's pretty striking effect on how it looks and how it feels.
I think it is a look though. And I think there's some value to the look of a fully finished thing. But I would say also, in addition to that, I tend to gravitate more towards naked and, you know, aniline dyed stuff. I even like the raw Cordovan, the unglazed stuff. For me, the reason to like that stuff is to what you were saying earlier, is it changes and it really accepts everything you put at it. And that to me is like part of the magic in using leather for material is just something that's going to reflect your lifestyle back at you. You know, 5 years down the road, you're like, man, we've been some places together, you know? So I think I'll say that's the magic of it.
Yeah, I'll say one more thing and I'll stop being a shill for my own products. But if you look at, again, black chrome XL versus like natural chrome XL, you've got, that's a good, if you just like go and Google it, you can sort of see how it starts and how it ages. So natural chrome XL being a fully aniline product with no dye. So that's like, you know, naked, but with a top coat, basically with a clear coat on it versus black chrome XL, which would be a semi-aniline finished leather, same leather, but with the pigment added to it. And then you can see where it starts and then where it ends up and sort of make up your own mind which one you like better.
You know what's interesting?
Or maybe
about
you
that?
Don't like either.
Right, yeah. I mean, people don't have to like leather at all. I've been wearing some black chrome XL boots this week, including today. And I noticed my toes are starting to get scuffed up. And it got me thinking about why I bought these black boots in the first place. I think I might have seen a photo from George Fogg of some Oak Street trench boots, very old black chrome XL that were heavily worn. And again, it kind of reminds me of this worn in denim where you get that depth, sort of faded look. And the thing that sold me on the black chrome XL was how it finished up after being scratched. So I liked it. It's sort of the T-Core vibe, right? Where you have that contrast of the lighter natural crust underneath with some of the black pigment paint on top too. And then the unevenness of all of it. And then filling that over or filling in the scratches and then covering it over like a natural polish and like having it really glassy. Like that's a really good look. And I love it.
I like that look a lot.
Yeah. And it got me thinking about, you know, drum dyed black chrome XL versus this natural. And I think actually, if I could do it again, I wouldn't even pick drum dyed. Even though I think a lot of people would perceive that to be more premium look or a premium product, like a mill dyed black is, you know, got some marketing cachet to it. I don't know. I kind of would not want that. I'd rather have the contrast, especially because my boots have like they're the Grantstone Diesel boots with like this natural colored welt and then leather outsole. So it has this beautiful like concept to it where it's like, we're going to play off black and natural together. It's a black and tan, right? And everything about it is black and tan. I think it's a vibe that I really like and I wouldn't change.
There's even like for casual, it makes perfect sense. I think that where the mill dyed, where the non-contrasting base starts to make sense is as you start to go towards like the dressier end of things. Because if you have, you know, a really fine pair of calfskin shoes or you know, some leather shoes and you don't want to scuff it and then have the side of your shoe be a different color than the rest of your shoe. Or at least I don't think you do. If you're in like a suit, it might not translate as well then as it, if you're wearing like that denim jacket that you've got on where it's like, it's all sort of doing that and aging and that's sort of what it's supposed to do. I don't know.
When it comes to calf or dress shoes, I don't know if you want to generalize here, but do you have an assumption or an understanding of what types of finishes those calf usually are?
That's just like everything else is all over the board.
Yeah.
It could be aniline and semi-aniline. And I mean, there's one of the biggest challenges with the calfskin raw material that we've experienced, which I think we've talked about before, is just how variable it is and how the nice ones that you can do like the full aniline finish. Like that's the stuff that everybody wants. And that's the stuff that you're after, but that might only be 15% of the raw material. So what do you do with the other 85% that you're paying for? I mean, you have to do we're recyclers basically, or reusers. So we're going to figure out the tanning industry, like what do you have to do to make that usable? And in some cases that might be pigmented, you know? But that's kind of a less, at least in my mind, a less desirable, sort of less marketable product in that on that base. But I mean, that's what keeps us from doing the calfskin stuff is we want to do the nice stuff, but the not nice stuff, like it really is more, I shouldn't say not nice stuff. The way you have to finish the raw material that has more cosmetic challenges, to be diplomatic, is just not, it's not that's not the reason that you do CAT scan.
In my observation about ultra high-end dress shoes, and I do not have a full picture or understanding of this, but what I see a lot is it looks like the shoemaker has done a lot of work to finish over whatever the leather was that they got from the tannery. And I'd imagine a shoemaker in that world might actually want crust so they can have that blank canvas and sort of mold it into like their perfect blast of shine at your face. And like, maybe you just want that toe to be really bright. So that's what I was asking about calf is like, I feel like a fully finished piece with bright top coats, mirror plated and super shiny. I think that's what I assume most dress calf would be like. But again, like, I don't have a full picture of that.
It's all over. I mean, it's all, let me think about like a traditional pair of like tuxedo, like slippers. I mean, that's patent. That's like the other end of the spectrum. So it just depends on.
That's a really great example.
Who and for what and what year it is and what's in style. And but I think generally you're right. I think it's like a more natural, more neutral, sort of more traditional leather is one that's not fully finished, isn't fully pigmented. It might be semi-annealed probably in most cases. And it might have a grain embossed into it or not. I mean, it's like, it's just so, there's so many different options and so many years of product that are out there.
Those boutique guys though, they want the room to be able to make like a color fade in their final product. So like, I'd imagine they'd want, you know, a little bit of a more simple canvas that's more accepting of dyes and stuff. Yeah.
I mean, it depends.
I talked about how there are several fully finished, pigmented, painted leathers that I like. One example of the opposite of that, the crust stuff that I can think of, I think you did some crust horse butt with Viberg that were made into some beautiful looking things. Do I have that correct? Horse butt crust?
Yeah, it was like raw. The way to define this is not great. It's like partially processed or mostly processed shell cordovan is the best way to describe
it. So it's not crust?
I mean, technically it's crust. But cordovan is kind of, you can sort of, it's the, I mean, cordovan, or the way we do cordovan, is sort of like the exception to like every definition for a while. Because it's technically it's crust for a long time. And we're still doing stuff to it, even as it's just crust. We're drying it, we're oiling it, and we're.
Yeah, you're an oddball. I guess I was thinking of those as like a mega gnarly looking pair of shoes or boots because they are crust and they're inconsistent by design. Do you do any other, or can you tell me about some past projects that you've done using crust leathers that had a result you liked?
Some in the same vein. I mean, there are some of the like smaller shoemakers, or not even smaller, some shoemakers will take the unglazed natural shell cordovan, which is still kind of crust at that point, even though we've done a bunch more to it. We've just gotten it ready to accept color, and then we haven't put a color on it. So you can do what you were just saying. You can take that, and then you can start to impart your own dye on it, and it doesn't need to be even. It can be darker on the toe. You can sort of antique it, and then once you've done that, then you can put your own, or they can put their own kind of like top coat on it, which could either be, you know, wiped on as a wax or sprayed on, I mean, depending on who's making it. And then you end up with a product that's it's very handmade and very unique. So I've seen some executions that way that I think are really, it's pretty special. And that, yeah, and then there's been belts and, you know, there's been some natural Essex crust used in various different ways out there in the world. 316,
I was going to ask you to shout people out.
Yeah, they did. 316 made a, I think they just made one couch out of natural Essex.
Whoa.
Which I think they might sit on when they do some of their stuff. I sort of only halfway paying attention. Mm-hmm. I should be full way paying attention. But if you Google, or if you look up Stephen Ken, K-E-N-N for 316, it's like a pretty awesome looking naturalistics couch, which is totally only a product that someone knows exactly what they're buying to get. Because if you tried to sell that at Crate and Barrel, like you'd have like 98% returns, because people would just be getting product that would be changing, that you just put it in the sun and then it gets darker.
I mean, the other thing is, like, I imagine that's a leather for a purpose that you do not want to satisfy, because your skins aren't whole hides, so you're doing sides, and those pattern pieces for couches are massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a couch that I bought from a large company, and I took the cushion off, and on the back of the cushion, there's there is a brand on the back of one of the cushions that has been like, I forget the name of the industry term. It's like stuccoed. They bondo it, and then you can sand it after that, and then you can finish over top of that, and it like blends it in a lot. But I mean, they did that, but then they were smart and they cut it into the back of the cushion that you never see. And yeah, so it's
how did it make you feel?
So that's the kind
how
of
did it make games you feel when you got a couch with a brand in it?
Well, I think I was much more understanding than maybe somebody else would have been.
You were like, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's, I mean, I was like, that cutter knows what they're doing. Put it in the right spot. It was like right above, it's like a couch, cut like the back cushion of a couch, and then the leather like wraps around the top. And then below that, there's like a section of fabric, which is maybe because they don't have to use leather back there, so it's cheaper. But also because I think there's fabric in that spot, so the cushions don't slide around as much. But the brand was like right above that, like that it's fabric transition.
It's kind of wild that the leather tannery supplying them would even buy brands, but it's got to be a price thing.
Oh yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, you just buy native. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody. I mean, nobody. That's that we do that. I don't. That's not a normal.
It'd be pretty expensive to buy just no brands for consumer couch mass market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we buy as few brands as possible, as few brands as we. As you can in the market, and we still get brands. I mean, so you can never get away from them completely.
Let me ask you this: if you do a full finish, could you cover up brands? Depending. Let me ask that in a different way, because I think the answer would be yes, but would the result be something that a person would find passable as like a leather something?
Not the way we do it, I don't think. I mean, you could, you can sort of blend it in, and maybe you could cut it into certain parts, but it's never going to fully go away because the structure of the leather has changed so much. I mean, even going back to our last conversation, even if you were to flip it over and use it as like a rough out, I mean, the brand goes all the way through, so you see it on both sides, so that you can't even do that.
So you're never covering a brand. So what types of things would a full finish cover if it's not covering a brand?
Well, it depends to what extent. I mean, it could be, if we go really full finish and you're talking about like building up a new surface, like the PU coating, then you can cover the brand at that point, because you're only using the leather as like a base, and you're buffing it. You've sanded away the grain, and then which is probably not in great shape anyway, which is the reason you're sanding it away in the first place. And then you put the top on it, and you're everything underneath. You put not the top. I shouldn't say top in the context of this conversation. Then you're putting the PU coating on top of the leather, and everything is getting covered up. So I guess in that way you can. But we don't do any of that stuff. But what we do, we're trying to work with the natural
natural-based
product. Yeah,
trying to not be too Horween specific, but yeah, I think I got the point across. There is like. It also depends on so many things, but you can cover up things like bug bites, little scratches. You can hide a lot of those things by just like finishing my deck, right? Like I'm not going to see tons of junk in there, and then even fill in scratches and stuff.
Yeah. Superficial stuff you can take off and you can take off and cover up. And a lot of that depends on color too. I mean, color can either sort of level stuff out, or I mean, certain colors you put it on there and it'll actually accentuate whatever is going on. So you have to be aware of that too.
I was looking at our notes here, Nick. I think we covered a lot of this, but I don't know if we covered so much about the water-based finishes. What did you want to touch upon with that?
That might be too, I mean, given the conversation, that might be too, that might be too, that might be like a different,
a whole different episode on water-based finishing.
I don't know if we could do a whole episode on that. Maybe we could do a whole episode on that if we had,
we should get one of your dye suppliers on the show.
That's what I was thinking. Because I mean, my knowledge of that is like very high level, not high level. It's very superficial. It's general. It's not. I would struggle, I think, to relay information in like a clear way.
We should do that.
Just that. Okay. Yeah.
What's one takeaway that you want people to have about aniline leather?
Just that it's more natural looking, natural in quotes, and it's more. It's going to give you a leather that changes over time. So if you want something that's going to patina, and I think that I think that there's a direct correlation between how much a leather will patina and how much pigment is on it. You know, the more aniline it is, the more likely and the better, in quotes again, the patina is going to be, and the more pigment, you know, that's on the leather, the less it's going to change and the less it'll patina. You know, from one end where. At the end where there's no finish on it, that's going to change the patina the most. And then down to the car upholstery side of things that's got a crazy amount of paint and finish on it, that's not really going to change at all, or it's designed not to.
So you're telling me we could have had this episode be 1 minute long?
Sure, you can edit. You can edit out the first hour.
I don't know how long it's been. It's like we're hour 15-ish.
Yeah.
I don't have any favorites today, Nick, but there's some stuff I want to plug for myself because I haven't been sharing this much with people and I want to share more. I want you to be proud of me, Nick.
I'm very proud of you. You don't have to say tell me what you're going to tell me. I'm already proud of you, Phil.
Oh, thanks. You must be a father. I'm playing a sold out show in Chicago with my band Outrun the Sunlight. If you want to check out a progressive metal band, you can check out my band.
It's sold out. We can't even go if we want to.
Well, I'm just trying to give you some FOMO about it. But we're playing. Have you heard the band called Unprocessed? I don't know if it's your vibe. Have you? Heard
I haven't.
Them?
No. I'll check them out though. But no, I have not.
Have you listened to Polyphia?
Yes.
It's like Polyphia, but with the singer.
Okay. I like Polyphia.
I like Unprocessed. Two, I don't love the mixing and mastering on this album they have, but check out Unprocessed. You might like it. So we're opening for them in a couple weeks here. And I haven't played a sold-out show. I was thinking about this. We got word that was sold out this week. And I think the last time I played a sold-out show, I was playing in like an emo band in like the early 2000s. The Metro we sold out with another emo band. So like
is it the band that you toured with?
Yeah.
Is this Dorm Life?
That band was called Dorm Life. And I think we opened for a band called The Hush Sound back then. And they're
Dorm Life
good.
Spent a night on my floor in college.
In Vermont. Yeah.
That
was cool. This seems to be honestly this year is shaken out to be like the year of music and like we as a band, like we weren't really like trying to make these things happen, but we are going to be playing a couple festivals in Europe. I don't know if I told you about these, Nick, but we're playing in Belgium, which I know is a place you want to go. I'm excited. We're kind of extending the stay and taking my wife with me. And then later this year, we're also playing this post festival. It's called Post Fest in Indianapolis, which is a bunch of post rock bands. And it's got if you like post rock, you definitely want to check out Post Fest. I think we're playing on the second night. And then we're also playing at this festival in the UK. So this would be my first time playing and performing in Europe and then two in a year. And then the festival in Bristol is called Arctangent. And it's like the festival. So it's kind of wild we weren't really trying to make these things happen. And then they're happening and it's like all fresh and new. So it's like, this year was really shaken out to be like a music year for me in an unintended way. It's kind of funny. But I think we're playing the same day as Meshuggah. So like, I'm just going to be like fanboying them. If people have seen Meshuggah play live, You'll know exactly what I'm talking about, but it's the most extreme experience I've ever had. And it was like watching a horror movie, but like you're there. And it was like non-threatening at the same time. It's a very like bizarre sense that you get from being in their presence. And like the light show is like amazing and the music is brutal. I'm really excited to see Meshuggah live. That's I guess where I'm going with this whole thing. So maybe that's my favorite, Meshuggah.
Do they do a lot of like there's production value to the show. They're not just up there like playing. There's lights and lasers and
well the big gimmick, and it's not even a gimmick, it's like an incredible skill. If you go on YouTube and search Meshuggah light show performance, it's not programmed. There's a guy playing this like insane lighting rig controller, and everything that's happening, he's pressing the button, and you can watch him do it. It's mind-blowing because it's the craziest light show I've ever seen, and the guy's actually it's like another instrument. So in fairness, the band is pretty not entertaining to watch, except for the singer is remarkably terrifying. The band kind of just does their like in sync headbanging thing, which is ominous and threatening, but they don't really move around and do stuff. It's the light show is do yourself a favor, and when we get off this call, check out a live Meshuggah show. It's incredible. It's really, really cool. I think it may be the best looking thing. So check it out.
So on the scale of if the scale is Pearl Jam, who does absolutely nothing.
They don't do a light show?
No, I think that their gimmick is that they have no gimmick. That's someone I heard someone describe it that way. So there's no like they don't do anything. And then the other end of the spectrum is like Iron Maiden. So they're like closer to the Iron Maiden side of things.
Iron Maiden is like
a puppet like, show.
Yeah, it's something else. It's like something beyond. That's more like theater, right? I would say the Meshuggah one is more of like a. It's like an art piece. It's like you're looking at this like 3D art in front of you. It's pretty wild. But it's also, you know, immersive, and there's the audio components. Maybe that's a little too highfalutin sounding, but all I have to say is Meshuggah Live was like the craziest. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. Recommend.
It's intense.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
I don't know.
How about pizza? Do you like pizza?
I do like pizza. I do want to say I in the episode today, I was like pretty heavily leaning on like the experience that I have at our place, which I hope didn't make me sound like I just was like pushing our product the whole time. But it's just because that was like sort of the only way I knew how to talk about it. But anyway, disclaimer, I guess there.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel that way about these episodes. We put them out and it's like, okay, like we have a perspective that is our experience. But I think people are curious of that too. Like, also, I think we're the best leather podcast around because there are no other leather podcasts. So, like, we would know more about other people if, like, they want to talk about it. Maybe we should go ask them, right?
Yeah, but
I've been thinking about that a lot.
I don't know what it is about or maybe it's just my experience in the industry. So people are not super forthcoming about sort of their processes and like what they do, and I guess we kind of are more transparent maybe that's not smart of us, but
I don't know. Like I'll tell people on the show right now, like there are certain things that I will not talk about because I know that there's trade secrets. So like, we're not spilling all the beans here. But giving like the relevant information for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my favorite for you is us.
Yeah, favorites. I mean, do I like pizza? I was just talking to you about pizza the other day.
That's why I said that. I was trying to give you a softball.
There's a place called Professor. Yeah, thank you. The mortadella pizza from Professor Pizza, which I've only ever ordered it one time. So I don't know if it's a consistent favorite, but it was pretty recommend based on that one time.
You gotta take me, dude. Did you say it had pistachios on it?
Yeah.
I think you did a weird subconscious trick on me because I must have went to Trader Joe's like the day after. I've been trying to not eat too many sweets, but they had this like chocolate, I don't know, candy thing with pistachios on it. I was like, oh, I gotta get like I had to get them because of the pistachios. They're okay. Yeah. They're all right. But take me to get pistachio pizza, man. Maybe next podcast we'll do it from Professor Pizza.
Maybe Professor Pizza will sit down with us.
Oh, sponsor.
I wonder what his PhD is actually in. Do you think they do that to give PhDs in pizza?
Actually, I kind of want to touch on that too. Like, I'd be curious to hear from the audience if they are interested in the non-leather topics, because you brought up Professor Pizza as a joke. Like, a year ago, I would have been like, yeah, we should try to make that happen. It seems like people are more engaged with our extreme deep nerdery about specific things like we did today and last week. So I'd be curious to hear if people want us to mix it up every now and then. Because the original goal for the podcast was to certainly talk about leather, and the numbers Nick and I talked about was like 90% of the time want to be like hard leather chat, and then 10% of the time is other people making things, doing cool stuff. So we are planning to move away from that, but I'd be curious to hear what the audience here thinks. So leave us a comment there. Or I guess you can email us fullgrainpodcast@gmail.com. Honestly, I've been pretty bad at responding to people. I'm so sorry. I've responded to some people last night. I would say the best thing to do is leave a comment on the YouTube videos. I tend to see those eventually. So it'd be cool to hear what you guys think.
You can also send an email through, because we should get it from as many different places so that we don't respond to five messages. But if you send a message just through like the Horween website and just title it Full Grain Podcast, I'll look at it. And
okay, what about like DM Horween on Instagram?
Oh, I'm terrible. I have like I don't know if I've ever responded to a DM on Instagram. I guess I'm turning into an old man with like I just like don't understand it. Like it's giving me mentions but also messages, but you have to approve. I just don't.
It's a lot. I feel that I have the podcast, I have Ashland Leather, I have my band, and then I have all the like social media and channels for them. Like I guess at Ashland I have a team of people doing stuff, but it's pretty hard to manage one email inbox, let alone three plus DMs plus comments. So I'm not trying to give an excuse, but cut us a little slack. I do try to read them and respond to people when I can and when I see them. But if it's a stupid comment, I'm ignoring it. I'm a actor filling in. I read on the comments from last week's video that like they replaced me in the same way that apparently the conspiracy theory of like Joe Biden's been replaced by like some weird actor. There's like a stand-in that like this is the Phil stand-in.
Oh yeah. It's
the, no beard Phil.
Same guy that did Putin did this version of you.
Yeah. Dude, I've been cutting the crap out of my face with the razor blade. It's so fun. Actually, I'm starting to not like cutting myself. I think I cut myself a little bit here. But what's interesting, I started doing the shaving thing to look younger by cutting off all the gray hairs. Hint, hint, Nick. But the other thing is what really like made me do it. I also saw a comment. Somebody said my wife made me do it. That's not the case. She actually prefers the beard. So this is me being a man on my own. What really got me was more of like I started looking at different like male grooming products, and I was like, oh, that sandalwood aftershave sounds nice. I can't use that because I don't shave. It's like, let's try it out. You know, so I like just wanted to do like weird lotions and scents and check it out.
Yeah, you still look like a grown adult with no beard. Like if I don't have a beard, I look like
a baby,
a child. Maybe that's, or I maybe I have too high of an opinion of myself and not looking. I'm not looking at the wrinkles over the rest of my face as I'm getting
You look good. I'm jealous of your long hair too. I think it looks awesome.
I at least once a day I'm like, I hate this, I'm gonna cut it.
You're turning into me from high school right now.
Then I realize how much time I save by never getting my hair cut.
Do you really feel that? Are we still recording? I actually feel like the longer hair takes longer time to manage, you know?
I mean, it does, but I don't have to go to get it cut.
True.
I don't have to actually go to the hair cuttery.
Think about net time instead of day-to-day time.
Oh, net time, it's way more time.
Because you could just buzz this whole thing off, right? And you'd be like, out the door, I'm just ready to go.
That's what I did for the longest time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bring it back. I like this. This is a good Nick.
5 years, yeah.
I like this version of Nick.
I don't know. We'll see.
All right, man. Thanks for another good episode. Everybody check us out on YouTube if you haven't done that already. Do all the stuff. People hit buttons and comments and, you know, I have to say all these things. Otherwise, you won't do it. And we, you know, we don't really, in fact, we don't get paid for this. So, you know, if you want to pay us by giving us a thumbs up, that'd be cool. Pretty easy.
And I'm excited
I will like my own video. I'm not beneath that.
I'm always excited about those question and answer. And we did that one live stream. So if people have questions, it's always fun to see those.
Maybe we'll do that next.
We might not get to them right away. And also, if people have idea, I think I'd like to start getting some guests too. So people have ideas for guests. Those are always welcome too. We might completely ignore you, but it's still worth
send Nick a DM if you want to be ignored.
Yeah. I'll apologize in advance if you send me a DM. I'm not going to. If I reply to it, it'll be the exception to the standard practice.
All right, guys. Thanks for checking out the episode. See you again next time.